Good morning. So this morning we're gonna talk about Jesus as a human, and this is an interesting kind of concept. It's really funny in the early church. This heresy, for lack of a better term, this heresy developed, and it was called Gnosticism. And by the way, Joey, when you go out, can you shut that door when you go out? Because the light is blinding me off the grass. Thank you very much. This Gnosticism was this belief that it was impossible for somebody to be fully God and fully man. Therefore, Jesus wasn't God, and that was a teaching that kind of developed in the early church because people had such a hard time wrapping their head around the concept that Jesus was human and deity. And they'd say it couldn't be, he has to be one or the other. And so this Gnosticism developed that said Jesus wasn't deity, he was great, he was sent by God, but he wasn't divine. And so that kind of became a running issue in the early church, and a number of the apostles addressed that in their letters. It's easy to understand why people would come to that conclusion, because we have a hard time identifying Jesus as human. None of us really have a hard time imagining Jesus as divine. But the whole idea of Jesus as fully human is really hard for us because he was without sin, and so it's hard for us to kind of conceptualize that. So before we get into the actual text this morning, I want to remind you of a passage in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15, where the Hebrew writer says, "We have a high priest who is familiar with all of our weaknesses because he experienced them." And so the Hebrew writer reminding the Jews that Jesus experienced everything we experience as a human, and he is familiar with our struggles and our temptations. So this morning we're going to look at a text from Mark chapter 7. This is one of my favorite stories, mainly because it's such an odd story, and I love odd stuff, especially in the Bible. I love getting into the nuance of a story like this. This is a story about Jesus and someone that becomes known as the Syrophoenician woman. And so we're going to get into that text in just a second. But to really understand the text and some of what transpires, you really need to set this thing up. Now, I actually have notes. I don't look at these a lot, but I'm going to this morning because I just can't remember everything I wrote down. So, and mainly because I have some scripture that I want to reference. We don't need to go to it, but you might want to look at it later. So, in looking at a chronological Bible that kind of sets up the life of Christ, the four Gospels in order, I want to set up for you what has happened to Jesus in the weeks preceding the story we're going to look at today. Okay. So if we go back to Mark chapter 6, we have the reference of Jesus going to Nazareth, his hometown. I think I preached on that last week, right? And we talked about his family and his friends and how they rejected him. Now, the Luke account of that story also tells us that the people of Nazareth took Jesus out to a cliff and were going to throw him off the cliff and kill him. Okay, so really to kind of get a framework of where we are, we're going to go back to that Nazareth story where Jesus has gone to his hometown and he's been so rejected by his friends and family that some of them actually tried to kill him. Now, moving forward from there, in a chronological order, we have the execution of John the Baptist, who was Jesus's cousin and his forerunner. So the man who actually baptized Jesus, the guy who was the forerunner of Christ, Jesus' own cousin, has been executed. After that execution, we have the account, and that's in Matthew 14, by the way. Matthew 14 also recounts Jesus walking on the water and the feeding of the 5,000. But in John chapter 6, after Jesus feeds the 5,000, he starts teaching them. And his teaching is so offensive that everybody leaves him, to the point that Jesus even looks at the 12 disciples and says, are you going to leave me too? Okay? And so then after that occurs in John 6, he has a major confrontation with the Pharisees. So in the span of just a couple of weeks, Jesus' hometown has tried to kill him. His cousin has been beheaded. He's had thousands of followers abandon him after he preached something they didn't want to hear. And then he gets into a major confrontation with the Pharisees where he essentially calls them hypocrites and says that they, this is where Jesus says, you teach the precepts of men instead of teaching what my Father says. Now, how many of you have ever had a bad day? One of the things that has come out of the last year with the coronavirus is that I've noticed people seem to have a shorter temper, a shorter fuse. You know, it's like they get angry easier. People are more stressed. They're more volatile. Have you perceived that? That's kind of how people are. Some of you are going, I'm like that. And I probably already know that. But it's true of all of us. When we go through a difficult time, when we go through a difficult period, whether it's a long period or a short period, it tends to affect us, okay? So it's really important in setting up this story to kind of remind you of what Jesus has had to deal with in the previous few weeks. From his hometown trying to kill him, his cousin being executed, his followers abandoning him, and then the Pharisees having a confrontation with him. And so as we understand the fully human Jesus, we now get to this text in Mark 7:24. It says, Jesus got up and he went away from there to the region of Tyre. Now, before we go any further, why would Jesus go to Tyre? Now, take a minute and think about it. Tyre is outside of Israel. Tyre is not part of Israel, not technically. So why would Jesus go to Tyre? Now, as my friend Winford says, let that marinate. That's one of his words. His folks hate it when he uses that word. He tells me, just let that marinate for a minute. Jesus goes to Tyre. It says, when he had entered a house, he wanted no one to know of it. You guys remember those commercials for, I think it was United Airlines, where somebody does something stupid and it says, you ever want to just get away? And then they have the airline commercial, because that was for Corona. But any of you ever just wanted to be alone? You'd gone through some stuff. You were not in a good mood. You were tired. You were frustrated. You were angry. You just needed to be away from people. Any of you ever done that? Where sometimes you get home and you just look at the family and go, I'm going in my room. Don't follow me in there. Don't come in there. I want to be alone. Any of you ever just gone out and said, you know, I'm just going to go drive. I'm just going to get out and drive. By the way, don't do Greenville Boulevard. If you're going to do that, get out on the Beltline. You get on the Beltline where there's not a lot of traffic. You can drive 75 miles an hour, 80. Monty's not here. 90 if you want to, whatever. You know, you just get out there and let it roll. Just let it roll. Just get away. Sometimes you like to do that, right? Sometimes you just want to be alone. Jesus, and it's important to know, this is the fully human Jesus, has had two or three really bad weeks. Trying to absorb that his own hometown has turned on him to such a level they wanted to kill him. His cousin has died, and he probably hadn't had a lot of time to mourn John. He's had this awful confrontation with the Pharisees. He's lost all these followers who have turned on him. And so after all that stuff happened over probably a few weeks period, he gets out of the mainstream and he goes to Tyre, a place where he would expect to not be bothered. Okay, there's not a lot of Jews there, probably not a lot of Pharisees there. It's a place that he can get away from everything. He finds a house, he goes in, and he tells the guy, don't tell anybody I'm here. Now, if you're thinking, well, Stuart, you may be going a little far with this. Let me remind you, there are a number of times in the New Testament where Jesus will go up on a mountain alone, right? So this is not an outlier. For those of you who are going, oh, no, this is not an outlier. This is not an uncommon thing where Jesus would need some time away because he's human. And as fully human, he's got to deal with all these things that are going on. So it says he goes to Tyre and he enters this house and he didn't want anybody to know about it. Okay? So picture, if you will, this fully human Jesus who is dealing with all this stuff. And then at the end of that verse, it says, yet he could not escape notice. How many of you have ever thought it would be really cool to be famous? It's funny, not many of you raise your hand. I have at times thought, man, it'd be really cool to be famous, like a movie star or a rock star. And I usually think of it from the standpoint of the money, because that would be awesome. I mean, just the idea that I could go shoot a movie and it didn't matter if the movie was any good or not, they'd pay me like $2 million just to make a bad movie. I could do, by the way, I could make a bad movie. And I'd do it cheaper than Tom Cruise or some other star. It's like fat guy doing a movie. How much you pay me? I'd just do a cameo. I'd just pay me to stand there. I'd take the money. But you know what? If you've ever known someone who was famous, you know what they tell you? It's not that much fun. It's very overrated. Listening to famous people talk about the inability to go to the grocery store. Now, I'll tell you, my wife is not famous particularly, but I can't go to the grocery store with her, because if I go to the grocery store, she's going to stop and talk to somebody. Apparently everybody in Pitt County knows her, and they want to talk to her. It's funny, a lot of people know me don't want to talk to me, but when they see her, they want to talk, and she feels obligated to talk to them. It's like we'll walk in a restaurant, and the waitress, the host will say, this way to your table. And I'll be following the hostess, and I'll get to the table, turn around, no Stephanie. She's over there at some table talking to somebody. But does that happen to anybody else? Am I the only one? Okay. Now, I think how many people want to stop and talk to Stephanie, and Stephanie's not particularly famous. So can you imagine what it would be like to be famous? I mean, just you sitting there trying to eat your supper and people coming over wanting an autograph, or somebody coming over wanting to talk to you like they know you, and you're like, I don't know you. Why? That would probably get really irritating while you're trying to eat supper or buy groceries, and they're trying to pick up dog food for your dog and somebody wants your autograph. It's probably really frustrating. Imagine then Jesus, who's developed this reputation, and by the way, not just a reputation as a famous person, but as a healer. And how many people know somebody who's sick, who they would love for Jesus to heal? So Jesus is trying to get away from all of the craziness that he's dealt with in the past 2 weeks. He just needs a break. He just needs to get away. And he goes to this house in Tyre. He's like, I'm in Tyre. Nobody's going to know me here. But go in this house. But the passage is, no, that wasn't going to work. Verse 25 says, but after hearing of him, a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately came and fell at his feet. Now, this is one of those interesting situations where if you read the account in a different gospel, it reads a little differently. Mark, which is a very short gospel compared to Matthew, Mark doesn't give a lot of fluff. In fact, when Mark recounts the trip to Nazareth, he doesn't tell you that the people of that city tried to kill Jesus. Luke tells you that. Well, in this particular account, Mark just says, hearing of him, a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit came and fell at his feet. But if you read the Matthew account, Matthew says this woman was out there wailing and screaming. And Jesus didn't answer her. And she stood out there and wailed and screamed so long that the disciples went to Jesus and said, would you please send her away? Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you, if you were in a situation where something terrible was happening to your kid and Jesus was coming through town, how far would you go to get his attention? Now take a minute and think about that. This is a one-shot thing. This woman has a child who's possessed with a demon, and obviously no one's been able to do anything about it. And the one shot, because she's in Tyre, it's not like she's in Jerusalem, she's in Tyre. So her one shot to get her daughter healed is in that house. And as a mama, what has she committed herself to? he ain't leaving that house without dealing with me. And anybody in here who's a parent can totally understand that concept. Nope, nope. You are not leaving here without seeing me. And I just remember, you know, when we were in the hospital with Caleb, the doctor would come and it's like, they'd start walking up, but whoa, 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 I haven't talked to you yet. So I understand this. You know, this, there's a woman and she's desperate and Jesus is in the house and she's wailing and screaming and here's Jesus. Now, the Jesus that we all we picture in our minds, that Jesus, what would he do when a woman was outside screaming that her child was possessed? What would the Jesus we all picture do? He'd go outside, right? Hey, girl, what's wrong? What's the matter? My child is possessed. Not another word. I'll fix it, right? Isn't that the Jesus we all think we know? But that ain't what he does. He sits in the house and acts like he's not, he don't even hear. Any of you ever ignore your anybody? You just sit there and you're like, I don't even hear you. I don't even hear you. I have this special gift I developed when we had children that I could turn them off. I could actually, my brain would adjust to their frequency and I could tune them right out. And Stephanie would sit there and go, would you please answer them? And I'm like, who? I wouldn't even hear him. She goes, Caleb is standing there going, Daddy, 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 Daddy. I was like, I was watching TV, baby. How did you not hear that? It's a gift. It's a gift. It's a daddy gift. Jimmy, do you have that gift? Yeah. Is that true, Hazel? Can he ignore you? Yeah. Carissa, yours can? Is that true, Jason? Turn her right off. It seems like it's more of a daddy gift. Jim, did you have that gift?
I don't think so.
You didn't have it? I bet Belinda did. Yeah, okay. All right. Apparently, it depends on your kids. Belinda's like, no, I had that gift. Jim didn't, but I did. I think it's bad if both parents have it, because then something bad could happen to the kids. So I guess only one parent gets it. It's a recessive gene, maybe. But you think about, here's Jesus sitting in the house, and the Jesus that we all think we know, that divine Jesus, would run right out that door and help that woman out. But here's the problem. There's also human Jesus. And human Jesus is tired. And he needs a break. And he's come to get away. And he's just not in the frame of mind that he wants to deal with this situation right now. Now, we hear that and go, Stuart, I have a hard time buying into that. Okay, well, let's move to the next verse. So finally, it says that the woman was yelling and screaming about the unclean spirit. She fell at his feet. Now, the woman was a Gentile, a Syrophoenician woman. Matthew's version says she was Greek, but that was a generic term for anybody that wasn't Jewish. So it says, the woman was a Gentile of the Syrophoenician race, and she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. So she would not let it go. And I don't know if she actually got in the house or she's outside the window. It's hard to know depending on the two narratives. But you get the idea regardless. She is where Jesus can hear her. He can probably see her. And she is raising Cain because she wants her daughter healed. And Jesus finally just has to talk to her. So, verse 27. He was saying to her, let the children be satisfied first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you think that sounds like the Jesus you know? Nobody? I look through my New Testament. I flip through the pages. You know what I couldn't find? I could not find another time in the New Testament where Jesus talked to somebody like this. Now, if you're thinking that's interesting, let me throw some opportunities out there. The woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, and by the way, Jews tended to dislike Samaritans more than Gentiles. Jesus, when he talked to the Samaritan woman at the well, who had been married 5 times and was currently with a man that wasn't her husband, when Jesus talked to her at the well, you know what he was to her? He was nice. He was polite. He was respectful. He didn't say anything mean to her. Didn't say anything ugly to her. Just, you know, just very polite with her. Very, talked to her very nicely. When the woman got caught in the act of adultery, remember that one? The woman gets caught in the act of adultery. They drag this woman in there and throw her in front of Jesus and said, "What do you want us to do with her?" Jesus, kind of, remember he wrote in the sand? Then he looked up and said, "You without sin, cast the first stone." And after everybody left, what did he do? He looked at her and what did he say? "Where are your accusers? Neither do I accuse you. Go and sin no more." That was really nice, right? That's a really nice way to treat a woman who was caught in the act of adultery. How about the centurion? The part of the occupation force, the hated enemy of the Jews, the Roman occupiers. When the centurion came and said, "I got this servant, I need you to heal." And Jesus was like, "Listen, man," he goes, "look, I know, I understand authority. You don't need to come to my house. You say the word. You just say the word, it'll be done." And Jesus said, "Man, what amazing faith. You go, I'll take care of it. It's done." Even when he was on trial for his life, do you remember Jesus being disrespectful or rude to Pontius Pilate? No. In fact, Scripture tells us, like a sheep led to the shears, he didn't say a word. He didn't even offer defense. In story after story after story after story after story, Jesus is always polite and kind and generous with his gifts and all that. But yet we get to this crazy, weird story in Mark. And he looks at this woman and he said, "Hey, look, I'm sorry. It's not right to take the children's bread and give it to their dogs." Now, in preparing this sermon, because this is one of those sermons that it's hard to preach, a lot of ministers will just skip this because this is hard to explain and it's kind of controversial. I called my daughter and I said, "Hey, you're taking a New Testament class, right?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "I want you to ask your professor what he thinks about this passage. Call me back and tell me what he says." Jim's laughing because I'm getting my daughter to do my homework. So she catches her professor after class. She says, "My dad is a minister." She said, "My dad told me to tell you that my father is an esteemed graduate of Johnson Bible College. And he has a question." And she said the guy laughed. So apparently he knows, he's heard of me apparently. She said, "What does your dad want to know?" She said, Mark 7:27. "Dad, we were just talking about this in class." Why do you think Jesus was so rude to that woman?" And the guy said, "You tell your dad, that's a great question." Because most time people don't ask that question because we don't want to address it. We don't like to deal with it. But I'm going to tell you, now again, I don't have anything necessarily to support this, so you take this for what it's worth. But this is, to me, one of those texts that reminds us how incredibly human Jesus was. And when Hebrews 4:15 says that we have a high priest who understands everything we go through and everything we deal with and understands all of our frustrations and temptations, to me, this is the proof text. This is a Jesus who understands how you feel after a year of quarantine. He understands your frustration. He understands that you're fed up. He understands that you're tired. He understands that you're irritated because he has been all of those things. And at that moment, when this woman, and somebody said, "But Stuart, isn't this a sin? No, it's not a sin, because what he tells her is what? It's true. It's true. Jesus didn't come for the Gentiles at that moment. He was there at that time for the Jews. That's who he had come for. And so what he tells this woman is technically not wrong. It's not said in an overpleasant way, but it's an analogy that the Jews used all the time in describing Gentiles. This would have been a common vernacular. And so in that moment, Jesus, who had been really super sweet to the woman at the well and to the woman caught in adultery, in that moment, he wasn't feeling it. Because he was dealing with a lot of stuff, and that human part of Jesus that just wanted to get away. And maybe the reason he didn't want to get away because he knew he wasn't in the mood to deal with people. I mean, he traveled with Peter every day. You think there are days he just didn't even talk to Peter? Peter, look, just don't talk to me today. I can't sin while I'm here. And if you talk to me, I might. So you and James and John stay over there. I'm sure there are days when he was walking around with Judas, knowing what Judas was going to do to him, going, I can't deal with Judas today. I can't. I got to deal with Pharisees today. I got 17 healings to do, six demons to cast out. I can't deal with you right now. And we hear that and we kind of laugh and go, oh, well, come on. I think you're overstating it. But am I really? If Jesus was fully human, and Jesus understands our struggles. And by the way, why does he understand our struggles? Because he lived them. He had them. He dealt with them. And so in this moment where he's not obligated, and remember, Jesus isn't obligated to heal anybody, right? The power that he has to heal is his to use as he chooses, right? So if he's not obligated to heal people, and he's especially not obligated to heal Gentiles, because he's here first for the Jews and then later for the Gentiles, does he say anything here which is factually incorrect? No. He just explains very politely, well, maybe not politely, but he just explains very matter-of-factly, look, I appreciate your situation. I'm not here for you right now. My gifts are for my people. Sorry. Now, if you can take a second and not be offended by this and kind of look at it for what it is, I don't know about you, but this makes me feel closer to Jesus. Because when I'm having a day like this, he understands. When I'm having a day when, you know, maybe Caleb's had a seizure up at college and it's bothered me. Or when I'm just in a mood, maybe I'm worried, you know, about my dad's health. Maybe I'm a little worried about him and something's happened with Caleb or Sam. Or just maybe it's just one of those days where I'm just not in a good mood. Any of you ever just been in a bad mood for no particular reason? I think one of the biggest problems we have as Christians is that we have a hard time connecting and identifying with Jesus because we only picture him as the divine, and we can't connect with him as the divine because we can't understand God. And we forget in that moment that the singular reason that God sent Jesus to be a human and dwell among humans is so that we could connect to him in a way we can't to the Father. We can connect to Jesus because he was one of us, but we forget he was one of us. And even when we go, well, he was one of us, we go, yeah, but he wasn't really. And it's almost as if we've fallen into that Gnostic view that we can accept Jesus was divine, but we can't accept his humanity. And if we can't accept his humanity, then we can't identify him like the Hebrew writer said. You got a high priest that gets you. And I think sometimes we think, well, Jesus doesn't understand because Jesus was perfect and he never did anything wrong. So Jesus doesn't understand. He says he does, but he doesn't because he wasn't really one of us. But he was. He was fully human. Now you think about this. If and by the way, in Greek mythology, do you know what they called someone who was the offspring of a god and a human? Anybody know what they were called? Well, there was a simpler word though. Hero. Hercules. Any of you know who Hercules is? Hercules was a hero. Hercules wasn't fully God and fully human. What was Hercules? He was half of each. In mythology, when a god and a human had an offspring, that offspring wasn't fully either one. He was half of each. But the scripture tells us that Jesus, as an offspring of God and Mary, wasn't half of each. He was fully each. And I don't think we accept that sometimes. And so when we read a story like this, we're like, oh, I don't see that. I don't understand this. This is hard for me to understand because this seems out of character for Jesus. Let me ask you, would this have been out of character for you? Some of you are going, oh, no. I've had those days and I didn't want to talk to people. I didn't want to be nice to people. I didn't want to be polite to people. I didn't even want to deal with them. And so in this moment where Jesus is dealing with what happened in Nazareth and the death of his cousin and the Pharisees and the disciples that have turned their back and left him, as he's dealing with all that stuff and he's come to Tyre specifically to get away from everybody, to just be alone. I'm in this house. I don't want anybody to know I'm here. Don't let anybody know. But somebody saw him. And so now this woman has come. And by the way, if she had just yelled for Jesus a few times and he didn't come out and she had just left, this would have never happened, right? But she wasn't going to let it go. And so we get to this final verse. He tells her, look, it's not right to take the children's bread, the children being the Jews. I said, it's not right to take what I've brought for them and throw it to the Gentiles. That's not what I'm here for. And then she comes up with this. But she answered and said to him, yes, Lord. But even the dogs under the table feed off the children's crumbs. Now, how many of you would have answered like that? Most of us in that situation have been ready to fight, right? Oh, you called me what? You called me a dog? Is that what you just called? How many of you can see yourself saying that? You called me a dog? Oh, no, you didn't. Some of you, I can even picture you doing it right now. Yeah, there's one of them right on front row. Get the... No, you did not. Get the head wag going. Ready to fight now. You're not going to talk to me like that. Who do you think you are? This woman. Look. Even the dogs get crumbs from the table. I'm not asking for the whole meal. I just want a crumb, Jesus. I'm not asking you to take anything from your children. Just give me a crumb, man. That's all I want. I wish I could have been there to see the facial expressions in this interaction. This is totally me, but as I picture this scene unfolding, I picture Jesus' face softening, right? And I picture him in that moment of humanity just kind of smile and go, he said to her, because of this answer, go. The demon has gone out of your daughter. And going back to her home, she found that her child was lying on the bed and the demon was gone. Now, if you look in commentaries come up with some really interesting assumptions about this story. Some say that Jesus was just testing this woman's faith, which seems a little odd, because if she didn't have faith, she wouldn't have showed up in the first place. And she would have stayed outside and yelled for however long she yelled. And I don't know how long she yelled. I kind of picture it being like an hour or two that she's out there yelling and screaming. Long enough to irritate the disciples, right? Long enough to irritate them. Some people say that, well, Jesus did this because he really, really didn't want to do it. Well, if he didn't want to do it, he wouldn't have done it. But I think that at the core of this story is a very human Jesus that identifies with us. That lived through a life where sometimes he just wanted to be alone. He just wanted to get away. And he wasn't in the mood to deal with people. And he felt frustration and bitterness. You know, and if you're sitting there going, I don't know. I mean, again, think about what it would be like to go to your hometown and have your friends and family that you grew up with try to kill you because they were so offended at your message. And then he's dealing with the death of his cousin who's been executed. And if you're thinking that didn't affect him, keep in mind, why had Jesus come? To die? So what do you think John the Baptist's death reminded him of? This is going to happen to me. They killed him. They're going to kill me. I know that's coming. What do you think it'd be like to live with the knowledge every day of the day you're going to die? If you knew right now the exact date that you were going to die, as that date got closer, do you think that would impact you? And so here's this very human Jesus, fully human, that has dealt with the rejection of his family and his friends, the death of his cousin, his battle with the Pharisees, the rejection by his own disciples. And now he just wants to get away, and now here's this woman. She is not taking no for an answer. He says, because of this answer, the demon has gone out of your daughter. I want to ask you a question this morning. As you think about her reaction, what's the word that comes to mind? Humble. Humility, right? Humility. Jesus talked to her like that, and she didn't get angry. She didn't get mad. Well, maybe she got angry or mad, but if she did, she didn't show it. What'd she do? She humbled herself and said what? Look, I just want a crumb, man. I just want a crumb. He was touched by her humility. There are two things in this story that I want to make sure we get out of this today. The first one is about the humanity of Jesus and understanding that he connects with us and he understands our frustrations because he's gone through them. I can't overstate that to me. That's just too important. But there's a second element of this, which is the reaction of the woman and her humility. One of the things that I have come to believe, not as a minister, but just as a Christian in general, is that there is a fundamental lack of humility on the part of the church. Now, when I say the church, I'm talking about the church as a whole. You may sit there as an individual going, oh, Stuart, I'm incredibly humble. Okay, and you may be. But let me ask you a question. How many of you are more inclined to think you're doing God a favor when you show up at church rather than thinking that you're honored to be allowed to come here? Like somehow if you're not there, God's going to be like, oh, I'm so sad they're not there today. Because I really care, because it really bothers me when you don't show up. You think we think like that sometimes? That he's the one who should be honored when we show up? That he should be thrilled when we decide to meet around his table? Not that we should be thrilled that we're allowed to meet around it, but that he should be thrilled when we show up. We sometimes treat this relationship with God as if he should be thanking us for being faithful, like we've done him a favor. Like when we put money in the place, like, yeah, I don't know how Jesus would have survived if I hadn't put his check in today, because Jesus was getting pretty close to being broke. Jesus is almost out of money. You know what Jesus said about that? Cattle on 1,000 hilltops? Who they belong to? Me. We treat God sometimes as if there's an inverse concept where it's not us that should be humble and grateful. It's him. He should be thanking us. He better be glad I'm here today. Because it's cold out there, man. He better be thankful I showed up because it was chilly. I could have stayed home. And as absurd as that sounds, when we stop and we think about it, we probably all have thought that before. There's an old saying, familiarity breeds contempt. You guys heard that saying? Sometimes we've been in a relationship with God so long, maybe, relationship, however you define that, we've been in a relationship so long that we have forgotten that we are here at his invitation and his grace. And we should be the humble ones. You shouldn't feel like you did something important because you showed up at church today or because you tuned in on Facebook Live. Well, I'm a really good person because I sat down and turned it on the TV. I'm really important. Oh, I showed up at church. I really did a good thing. No. God did a good thing by creating a format for you to be here. You should be humbled that you're allowed to be here. When you meet around this table today, when you take the Lord's Supper today, you should be humbled that he's willing to share this meal with you. You're not doing anything great by taking it. He did something great by allowing you to participate in it. And I think we get this thing backwards sometimes where we have kind of approached God and said, you better be glad I'm doing this. And this woman gets it right. When Jesus says, hey, look, that's not what I'm here for. I'm sorry, I can't help you. She kind of picture her throwing herself down at his feet and just saying, look, I'm not asking for much. I just want a little bit, just a crumb. I just want a crumb. You ever felt like God hadn't done enough for you? Has that ever crossed your mind at any time? That your blessings weren't as good as somebody else's, somebody else got blessed more than you did, and you were like, that's not really fair. I didn't get as much as that person. I don't think that's fair. I think God's shortchanging me here. You ever felt like he hadn't answered enough of your prayers, that you prayed and he hadn't given you quite as much as you thought you deserved? I've been pretty faithful. I would have thought he'd done more for me than this. There are two important models in this story, and I hope you accept both of them as reality today before you leave. Number one, I think this story is an incredible reinforcement that Jesus understands who you are, and he understands your frustration. He gets it because he was human, and he wasn't partially human. He wasn't a little bit human. He wasn't a quarter or a half human. He was fully human. He dealt with all the emotions and all the temptations and all the frustrations that you do, and you need to make peace with that so that you can be closer to him because you understand that he understands you. And this story to me is just a great example that Jesus had days where he's like, look, I understand. He's sitting there, he's standing by the Father, and when you're having one of those days and you're not being as nice maybe as you could be to people, he's standing by the Father going, I had days like that. Forgive them, Father, because I know how they feel. I know. I've had those days. I've had days when I didn't want to deal with people. You remember how I talked to that woman in Tyre? Yeah. I didn't sin. I didn't tell anything that was wrong, but I wasn't as helpful maybe as I could have been right away. I understand. They've been in quarantine for a year. They're crazy. Just be patient with them. Our advocate understands us. The second thing is we should be humble in that relationship. That we should never walk in the doors of church feeling like God should be thankful that we're here. We should never meet around this table as if we're doing him a favor by partaking of this meal. But that every time we have an opportunity to fellowship with him, to have a relationship with him, to speak with him in prayer, whatever we're doing, the honor is ours. The honor is ours. That the God of the universe, the creator of all things, went to such lengths to make a way for you to have relationship with him. Not necessarily the other way around. We are here at his invitation. We are in his house at his invitation. We meet at his table at his invitation. We receive grace and salvation at his invitation. I'm going to ask the praise team to come, and they're going to lead us in our communion hymn this morning. I think Brother Bob has our meditation this morning. And as we sing that song this morning, I want you to prepare yourself to humbly meet at his table, to accept with humility the invitation that he has offered you to be one of his children, to be at his table, to be in his house.